I have this passive aggressive streak in me where I will not let you over.
No, and I'll stare straight ahead. I won't look at you.
Yeah.
I'll just pretend I don't even notice you.
Sometimes, though, like, I'll be a real dick and I'll look at you and let you know just that I know you're head. Fucking there, but you're going to sit there.
Just shake my head.
It's Movies On Up, Love and Waves. That's what we need in these dark days. I am Dave, joined by the sand to my sunny day, Ryan.
You know what I love about you, Dave? You just keep getting older, and I stay the same.
Yes, we are Movies On Up. Our tagline this week is whatever I just said. I closed it out already. Love and
Something
Waves.
Something about sun. Yeah.
Love and waves. That's what we need in these dark days. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up on moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or Twitter @MoviesOnUp. If you know what it is and we pick you, you win the glorious Movies On Up prize package.
Maybe some bongos in that prize package.
Maybe some bongos. No shirts. Definitely nope. No shirts. We are Movies On Up. This week, Interstellar comes out in theaters, so we figure, we have no other ideas. Let's do our favorite Matty McConaughey movies.
Because, I mean, space movies would have been too easy,
I feel like
guess.
We've done it.
Maybe we have. I don't know.
I think we've done space movies and... I don't know.
Who gives a shit if we don't remember? Neither does anybody else.
Yeah, so we're doing our favorite Matthew McConaughey movies, which, let me tell you, more difficult than I thought it would be.
For me, it wasn't a question of finding five that I like, because that was pretty easy. It was like, well, how many of these are Dave going to pick? And are there any ones that I know he hates that I like that I can put on my list so we don't have crossover? And I know that my number five and my number four are movies that you hate, won't be on your list, and there won't be crossover. I cannot vouch for 3-2-1, however.
Yeah, I couldn't vouch for that because I could barely... Usually I make a list of like 10 to 12, and then I narrow it down to five and have also-rans. I got six. My top two, I knew. 3-6, they're all the same to me. I really don't care. But so if there's crossover, I'll move it around. I don't care. But anyways, about our Matthew McConaughey, Academy Award winner Matthew McConaughey, and
that's a thing now,
and possibly
Emmy Golden, Award winner.
Emmy Award winner when that time comes.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't know, Golden Globe Award.
It's not TV on up, whatever.
No, but whatever. Enough about that. Our number five Matthew McConaughey film.
My fifth favorite is one that you hate. We've talked about my number five and my number four on the show before, and that's how I know that you hate him, because pretty much the only time I talk to you is when the microphones are live. So if I know something about you, it's probably because we said it on this podcast, and I know that you happen to hate my number five, which is from 2012. It's Lee Daniels, The Paperboy, starring Matty Mac, Zac Efron, Nicole Kidman, and John Cusack. When you really start to think about what is going on in this movie, it has got a lot of moving parts. To try and boil it down into the simplest of terms, it's kind of a did he or didn't he kind of suspense thriller where McConaughey plays a reporter who's doing a story on whether or not Cusack's Hillary Van Wetter has killed the local sheriff. No word on what may or may not have been done to the deputy. Add in some pretty hefty subplots about racism in the South with Matt's partner, played by David Oyelowo, and a decidedly weird love triangle between Efron, Kidman, and the imprisoned Cusack. You have what could be a giant dumpster fire of a movie, entirely too many storylines going in too many different directions. But I think that in particular, the direction of Lee Daniels really gives all involved in these particular storylines an opportunity to shine and lets all of these storylines become fleshed out. I didn't feel like anything was maybe rushed or given like a short shrift just because, we got so many things going on. Let's just kind of wrap up this racism thing. It's not really all that important. I think all of the storylines did add something to the movie. They all kind of build on each other. And I thought it was a pretty serviceable performance from Efron, who, again, you mentioned in the top, like, no shirts. I mean, he pretty much does not wear a shirt. He makes McConaughey look like he's dressed to the nines the whole time. But you have Cusack, who's a pretty good actor in his own right, Nicole Kidman, who's great. And I guess this was maybe like sort of McConaughey building to his powers. Obviously, you know, I think once we get to our top movies, it'll be pretty clear that we both think that he's pretty good. So you have a lot of talented actors, and then you have the kid from High School Musical, who I thought acquitted himself about as well as you would possibly
hope. I like Zac Efron. I've been an Efron apologist. I think he does good with what he's given.
Yeah, and I thought with what he was given in this movie, which was a sizable part, I thought he did pretty well.
I think he held his own, and not just held his own. I think he looked like he belonged in that cast with an Academy Award-winning lady and a future Academy Award-winning dude. But that's a movie. My number five, going back, what year was Paperboy? That was 2012.
2012.
Yeah, mine also comes from 2012. Not a big role for Matthew McConaughey, but a fun movie. It is Magic Mike, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Obviously, this is a Channing Tatum movie, 100%. But Matthew McConaughey's Dallas adds a whole other element to it. I really like McConaughey in this movie. It's almost like he was born to play this role, but he was having fun. Like in the whole movie, I think it did so well because it just, you could tell people were just having
shirtless
fun
dudes.
Making it. Yeah, so
that's why I watched it.
I'm bummed that Dallas isn't coming back for the second one, but
maybe uncredited cameo. You never know, man.
Could you imagine Magic Mike 2?
I am.
When
right
you
now.
Have after this year, you have Academy Award winning Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
And then Academy Award winner Matthew McConaughey, and then like Alex Pettifer and Matt Bomar and stuff. But
Emmy Award winning Joe Mantegna, whatever.
Manzano Manello.
Yeah, that guy.
I was reaching at this point because I tried
to start off your list reaching.
Yeah, yeah.
Reaching around.
Yeah, I tried to stick with like main McConaughey movies, but I guess that topped out at four. And then my five is just, yeah, he's in this movie.
I think depending on your preference, maybe Magic Mike is a Matthew McConaughey movie. If you prefer him to Channing Tatum, yeah, maybe that's why you came to see the movie. I don't know. I came for Diesel, and I stayed for C-Tates. My number four definitely is a Matthew McConaughey joint. I really only have one on my list that really isn't a McConaughey movie. It's not this one. It is of relatively recent vintage, and it's another movie that you hate, so it will be a movie. It is a movie from 2011, directed by Bill Friedkin. It's Killer Joe, starring Matthew McConaughey as Killer Joe, Emile Hirsch, Juno Temple, and Gina Gershon. It's kind of like the most tragic and trashy episode of Dateline you may ever see. Emile Hirsch plays a scumbag drug dealer who seems to owe some money to a different scumbag drug dealer. And he gets this plan in his head that he's going to hire a local detective turned hitman, played by McConaughey, to murder his mother for the insurance money to pay off the debt. Now, the only problem is the beneficiary of the insurance policy is his sister, played by Juno Temple. It's a simple enough plan, I guess, on the surface. But then when you throw in Hirsch, Gershon as his stepmom, and his dad, played by Thomas Hayden Church, everyone kind of ends up scheming against each other, and that all seems to kind of blow up in everyone's face in the finale, which I think, and I understand why, gets some folks riled up about this movie. I believe it was rated like NC-17 at some point, and I mean, I guess when we get to the end, I can see where some of that's coming from. We're in November. In a couple weeks, we're going to do our Thanksgiving episode, which is to be determined, I guess, really what that's all about. But I think we had one about family get-togethers last year. And this would be like the worst possible family meal get-together. They've got some Kentucky Fried Chicken, and you will never look at a drumstick quite the same again once you get through Killer Joe here. All sorts of violence and gore involving a can of, I think it's like pumpkin pie filling or something, gets put to pretty interesting use. In terms of performances, McConaughey does what's needed. He really adds menace to the character of Killer Joe, while he's still somewhat gentlemanly, especially, I guess, when it comes to Juno Temple. And she is about as naive as humanly possible, where she almost seems you know, sweet but a little bit slow. I love Emile Hirsch, and I think he was really, really good in this movie. It is his movie. He does have to carry it, and he's a giant scumbag, and he's one of those guys that really you want to feel bad for him, but then he continues to do things wrong that he sort of gets what's coming to him at the end. But Hirsch is able to still kind of make you root for him all the way up to the end. There's a lot going on in the movie, and I think maybe I like the plot more so than the actual execution itself, but it's an interesting movie to say the least. I mean, if you're easily offended, yeah, maybe stay away. But if you're a fan of intrigue and, I guess, insurance fraud, this movie is for you.
This movie's like, it's one of those that sometimes I'll watch a movie and I just can't pin my finger on it. I really like the acting in this, especially from McConaughey and Juno Temple. I thought they were top-notch. And even Gershon, who I generally despise, I thought was really, really good. The plot, I liked. I liked everything going on. I liked the acting. Somehow didn't like the movie. Usually those are two key parts that if the acting's good and the plot's good, it's hard not to be into it. But for some reason, this movie just didn't do anything for me. And I went in with high hopes. Maybe that's why, because I like McConaughey in these kind of roles. Friedkin's burnt me quite a few times, so you would think I would learn by now. But I liked the cast, I liked the concept, so I went in with higher hopes.
Sometimes Friedkin just really bugs you.
Ugh, don't even get me started on that. Like, I just hear his name and I just think of that movie, which is me and Jason West saw it like Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, and it was just like one of the worst days of my life. It's like only because of that movie. It's not like anything else bad went on about it. It was just like I wasted a Thursday afternoon.
Dave's lived a pretty good life.
Yeah. But speaking of high expectations for Killer Joe and not being met, I think the total opposite happened in 2011, where my number four comes from, directed by Brad Furman, The Lincoln Lawyer. Lincoln Lawyer, it's a series of books about a lawyer who just works out of the back of his Lincoln. It's a stupid concept. Matthew McConaughey's kind of perfect casting for it, because if I see him in law school, I'm just going to assume he's working out of the back
of his
car. It's
like Legally Blonde, but for dude.
Yeah, Legally Dude. But the movie's actually really good. Like, it's actually surprisingly, you know, Ryan Phillippe, who I'm a sucker for Ryan Phillippe. I don't think I've ever disliked him, and he's made some garbage.
We need to do, I don't mean to get off on a tangent here, because I like Lincoln Lawyer. It was one of the ones that I sort of left off because I thought you might have it, so I'm glad you put it on here. We need to do a Way of the Gun episode. Just because of all the, like, Ryan Phillippe and Nikki Catt, like, for almost no...
Taye Diggs.
Yeah, for almost no apparent reason, we love these dudes, and we've never... Let's put that one on the back burner. We're going to do a Way of the Gun.
Because I love Ryan Phillippe, and I love that movie. That movie's so good. But this is a different Ryan Phillippe. Like, this Ryan Phillippe is so good, and it's... And McConaughey's so good is kind of like your, you know, your sleazeball-y lawyer who gets sleazeballed. And if you go in expecting... I'm going to tell you the movie's about Matthew McConaughey plays a lawyer who works out of back of his car. Just go in with that notion, because your expectation is going to be really, really low. Actually a pretty good legal mind fuck thriller. Like, it's actually pretty good.
Ah, that old genre.
Yeah, but I do like me some Ryan Phillippe, so I liked him in this. I don't know, speaking of Ryan Phillippe, for some reason, I cannot...
Another Ryan Phillippe tangent?
Yes. I cannot see, like, a bun with sesame seeds on it without thinking of Claire Forlani trying to kill him in that, what was that, Breach?
Yeah.
Like, one of his, like, headlining roles when Ryan Phillippe was the next big star. But yeah, so your number three Ryan Phillippe movie.
It's MacGruber?
That would be my number one.
Yeah, what?
No, it would be my number two behind Way of the Gun. I just, you know what?
Way of the Gun.
Off top of my head, number one, Way of the Gun. Number two, MacGruber. Number three,
Cruel
Franklin.
Intentions?
No, number three,
I
Franklin.
Like that one.
Franklin's fantastic. Number four, probably Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah.
Number five.
Just put five as Cruel Intentions, and then
probably because
bonus.
Yeah, I'd have to take a look into that a little bit more. But that's our top five Ryan Phillippe movies off the top of my head.
Gosling's gonna be so jealous. My number three, as far as I can tell, has zero Ryans in it at all. It is from 2001, starring and directed by a guy who I went through a phase, and I was pretty into his work. It's Bill Paxton, starred and directed 2001's Frailty, also starring Matthew McConaughey and Powers Booth.
Yeah, I'm afraid of demons, are you?
As good as McConaughey is at that sort of Southern drawl thing, I think he maybe gets out-Southerned in a very strange way by Bill Paxton. And I was definitely, in 2001, in my Bill Paxton phase, where everything that guy did, I was all about it. So when I heard that not only was he in this movie, but he was directing it, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm signed up. I didn't really know what the hell it was about. I knew that, all right, I think it's about a killer. And I believe that there's some kind of element of fanaticism.
Demonics, yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines to it. And that was enough. I was like, fine, I'm going to go see this movie. Maybe not unlike you with The Lincoln Lawyer, went in with, you know, relatively mild expectations. I was just like, well, fuck it. It's a Bill Paxton movie. Because at this point, to me, Matthew McConaughey, oh, you mean the guy from Dazed and Confused, whatever. And I was never that into Powers Booth. This was a Bill Paxton joint for me. And I thought that as the serial killer dad, he was incredible. The story is told mainly in flashback, where Paxton is sort of the God told me to do it killer. And as the performances go, you know, they're fine. Paxton is really good. McConaughey's pretty good. And the kids that play like the younger versions of the brothers are pretty okay as well. But for me, it's the story that really carries this one. It's seemingly pretty straightforward through, I don't know, about 70-80% of the movie. And then it really kind of takes a dog leg at the end, and it's just nuts. As soon as you think you got it figured out, they throw three more things at you. Like, oh, shit, I'm glad they did this because it's great. Maybe it's a little bit like when you just think of the craziest thing. Boy, I wish they do that at the end of the movie.
Like, oh, I hope he gets attacked by an alligator.
Yeah.
And he does get attacked by an alligator.
And he gets attacked by an alligator. Sort of. That's sort of the story at the end of Frailty, but without, you know, really killing the ending for you. Don't leave early. Stick around for the entirety.
Yeah, see, this, I said my top two were pretty easy, and I knew right away. This was my number two, so we'll just pretend it's my number three, and I'll talk about it more, because I love this movie. I absolutely, but I don't know if I love this movie because I love it, or if I love it ironically. I don't know. I don't know if I love it because it's so ridiculous and I shouldn't love it, but I love it. Or if I love it because I do love it.
I mean, I saw it back in the day in like
2000. Oh, we watched it a ton.
Right. And I don't think that like hipsters had invaded yet.
No.
So I don't think that there's, at least from my perspective, there's no ironic love to this at all. I was into the movie, and then when the ending, I was like, oh, sweet, yeah. Thanks.
You aren't a demon, are you? That was the line. I misquoted it earlier.
Yeah.
But when I lived with Jason West, to bring him up again, the one I saw Bug with, much better memories of Frailty, because we had this on DVD, and this was just one of our go-tos, that we watched Frailty all the time. I remember I went on a first date with a girl, and I brought her home, and we watched Frailty, just because that was kind of my test, was like, I can kind of judge your personality on how you react to me showing you this movie. And I love this movie.
How did she react to it?
We dated for a few months, so I guess well.
So she wasn't a demon. Did you give her the demon test where you had to take the gloves off? And?
In a way. But, yeah, this I something about this movie I just really love. I haven't seen it in over a decade, I'm sure.
Because you haven't been on first dates in a decade.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. So I don't know if it's one of those that it just hit me at the right time, and at that point in time I was going to love that movie, but I really liked Frailty, and that was my number three, I guess.
Yeah, my number one and two, much like yours, they were the first movies that came to mind. My number two is really the only one that's not really considered a McConaughey flick in any way, shape, or form. It is from 2013. It's Marty Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street, starring people that aren't Matthew McConaughey, Leo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, and Kyle Chandler. Obviously, it's Leo and Jonah all the way in this one. But I think that McConaughey is always going to have sort of a special place in my heart when it comes to this movie, because I knew it was based off a book, and if you know anything about me, you know that I don't read books, so it may as well have been based off, I don't know, some alien telepathy. So when I went in to see the movie, I really didn't know what I was getting into. I knew all about the cast. We'd been talking about the cast for months and months and months when we were doing our news episodes. I knew that I like Scorsese movies, but I didn't realize that I was going to be in the midst of some kind of drug-fueled trip for the next 2.5 to 3 hours. Just the performance that McConaughey gives as Mark Hanna, at that point, I was like, all right, I see what kind of movie this is, and this is great. And I think his character kind of serves as the foundation for what would become Jordan Belfort. Like, he said, all right, this is a guy I'm going to pattern myself after, but I'm going to do it way more over the top than he did. Everything that you're laughing that McConaughey's character does, Belfort does, like, 30 times more intense by the end of the movie. And it's just kind of, if you were like me sitting in that theater and you didn't really know what you're getting into, as he's kind of instructing a young Leo on, hey, this is what our job is, he's also kind of saying, hey, this is what the rest of the movie is going to be, so buckle up and bump a line.
Yeah, in the limited screen time, he was really, really good in this movie. But yeah, you covered it all. He was so perfect. That first scene, that dinner or lunch scene when they go, it's so good. Occasionally you see an actor pull something off and it's like, oh, I can't imagine any other actor doing that performance as well. And that's exactly what McConaughey was in that lunch scene. It's like, I can't picture any other actor doing that without it just being a complete joke. His level of, I don't want to call it commitment, like just when he commits like that, it's believable.
I mean, you could see yourself having the same conversation with him, and he's not going off script. Like, this is just what he does, because he is kind of a free spirit, and I guess to some level, he was, Mark Hanna was a bit of a free spirit who was into making money and doing drugs.
My de facto number two now, I think I've talked about the Godzilla trailer theory, where the 1998 Godzilla trailer was such a good trailer that I was so stoked for the movie, and then I saw it, and it was terrible. And a couple of years later, I see the trailer again. It's like, maybe I was wrong. Like, that's a good trailer. So I saw it again, and it sucked. My number two is basically my Godzilla trailer of Matthew McConaughey movies. I love dragons. I love bald, tattooed up Matthew McConaughey, and I enjoy Christian Bale a great deal. So you put all of those in one movie and you get 2002's Reign of Fire. That movie has to rule. There is no way in the world that bald, tattooed up Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale, fighting dragons, no way that movie doesn't rule. The only problem is it sucks pretty bad. It's not a good movie. But even just now, like just talking about it, maybe I was wrong. Like, I want to revisit it.
No.
I've tried it, like, three times.
You're not wrong.
I've tried 3 or 4 times to watch Reign of Fire because there's no way that that formula could be bad. But it really is. But I just want to try again. Maybe I missed something. Maybe I'm missing out on something.
It's like that girl that you maybe dated a couple times, and you're like, she's a terrible person, like a real bitch. And it always ends horribly, but you're like, no, wait a minute.
But she's really cute.
Yeah. So there's maybe I'm
she's
making
cute.
This
she
up.
She likes zombie movies. Yeah. Like, I got to go back.
Maybe
to
it's
it.
Me. She was into Frailty. She let me feel her up while watching Frailty. So, yeah, but no, this girl's a bitch. Stay away from Reign of Fire.
Yeah, so that's Reign of Fire. But I do really want to go rewatch it now because I've kind of convinced myself that it's probably pretty good. I mean, it's about dragons and Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale. There's no way they could screw that up. So I'm going to go watch Reign of Fire again pretty soon.
Stay tuned for the discussion episode about Reign of Fire, where I say how much it sucks dick and Dave says, you're right. It'd be a real short episode. My number one may very well be Dave's number one.
I doubt it.
You doubt it? Okay, good. Then we really didn't have much crossover at all outside of Frailty. My number one, also from 2013, is a movie that I absolutely loved last year, and turns out I still love it. It's John Mark Vallée's Dallas Buyers Club, starring McConaughey, Jared Leto, and the lovely Jennifer Garner. We usually try and stay away from obvious choices on any given list. And doing a list of, like, your top 5 Matthew McConaughey movies it's very difficult to leave off the movie where he won his Oscar. When we did our Nicolas Cage episode, I couldn't leave off the movie where he won his Oscar. It happens to be my favorite Nicolas Cage movie, much in the way that Dallas Buyers Club is head and shoulders my favorite Matthew McConaughey movie. The acting all the way around is superb, and that's really kind of an understatement. I mean, both your leads, McConaughey and Leto, both won Oscars for it, so me saying it's good, yeah, if you don't believe me, well, check that out. I kind of felt like that it was the culmination of, like, several years from McConaughey. If you'd have told me back in 2005 that the Surfer Dude was going to win an Oscar, I absolutely would have said you were nuts. But I think starting in 2011, that was the year Lincoln Lawyer was out. That was Killer Joe.
Mud.
Yeah, Mud. Starting in 2011, I feel like there were enough flashes there that you could see that, yeah, all right, this dude's got some talent. And then by the time you really got into 2012, I don't think that anyone was surprised that he was talented. And at that point, I think I'd kind of bought on to, yeah, I could see this dude eventually winning an Oscar. And then all it took was just the synopsis of what Dallas Buyers Club was going to be about. And then it was just like, yeah, he's going to win an Oscar for this. He's going to be able to pull this off. And when he does, there's going to be no way they can't give it to him. And they're, you know, obviously they did. Watching True Detective, he was great in that as well. So it's not necessary, at least at this point, it hasn't been like a, well, he did one great thing and now he's going back to making shit. He's really kind of stacked really good project on really good project. And obviously I'm excited to see Interstellar, to see what he does with that and kind of what he picks going forward, because it seems like now he gets to choose what he does.
And here's the thing. Like, I do like Dallas Buyers Club, but I feel like we've talked about it so much. I did leave it off my list because I knew you'd have it on yours. But looking back at his career, I was trying to pinpoint, like, when he became a punchline. Because my number one is an early movie. We'll get back to it in a second. But, okay, Dazed and Confused, he kind of stole that show. Like, for the little he was in it,
sure,
he was great. You know, small part, Angels in the Outfield, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's still getting his start. Boys on the Side, Glory Days. But then he goes in Lone Star, pretty significant, like, role in there, pretty serious. Okay, Larger Than Life, that was the elephant movie. But Contact, that's a serious role.
Amistad,
I thought he was fantastic in. The Newton Boys, maybe that first kind of misstep to where it's just a dumb premise. And then EdTV. But then he follows that up with U571, which is right back to a serious one. Wedding Planner, okay, that's his rom-com. And Frailty, Reign of Fire. Then it starts like, okay, How to Lose Your Guy in 10 Days. Tiptoes, which, my good lord. Sahara.
Which I thought was fine for an action-adventure flick.
And
I
two
had
for
no
the,
complaints with
two
it.
Two for the Money was my lone, like, also ran, because it's a disposable drama, but, you know, I'm a sports, I used to gamble, so it was kind of cool for me. Then Failure to Launch, We Are Marshall, like he turns around and does, and then Fool's Gold. So, I mean, I think it was just the way stuff, he never had a string of just, he got this stigma of, oh, he just does stupid rom-coms with Kate Hudson.
Which really
they were always sandwiched in with, like, legitimate stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, like, he did Surfer Dude and Ghost of Girlfriends Past in, like, 2008 and 2009 back-to-back, and then we didn't really
took
see
2 years off.
Yeah, we didn't see him again until The Lincoln Lawyer. I think that's kind of, especially Surfer Dude, that's what left you with that image of him.
And, I mean, that's kind of when
it's probably unfair, but
that, yeah, I mean, that he did have a string of, you know, rom-coms, but he still had We Are Marshall, U571 in the middle of those. Surfer Dude was just kind of the fuck it movie, I feel like. I feel like he had a chance to make this, and he just did. But then in 11, he comes back with Lincoln Lawyer, Bernie, which was a small Jack Black movie that he was really good in, Killer Joe, The Paperboy, Mud, Magic Mike, Dallas Buyers Club, Wolf of Wall Street, now Interstellar. So, I mean, I don't know when he became such a giant punchline. And even up to this year, like, I mean, he's been legit since 2011. But then coming into last year's Oscars, it was like, oh, this is the It's just weird. Like, and it didn't dawn on me until I actually looked chronologically at his.
It didn't take long. I mean, it really didn't take long to kind of put the stigma of ridiculous, shirtless, rom-com guy. And I feel like almost it didn't take long for him to get that stigma. I don't think it really took long to shake it either.
No, and I think he's largely responsible for why, you know, for the most part, your big-time actors aren't doing rom-coms now. Like, you look at your A-listers now, like, maybe not rom-coms. I mean, rom-coms and, like, Nicholas Sparks movies, like, they're not made by people that have really established themselves as anything else yet. Like, Channing Tatum was in one, but that was before everybody loved him. You know, it's usually Josh Duhamel or...
Marsden.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Dudes like that. But I don't know. My number one is back in that very...
Is Surfer Dude.
I wish. It's back in that early part of his career where, you know, he was a good-looking dude, but you didn't know exactly what you were getting with him. Going back to Joel Schumacher's A Time to Kill, based on the John Grisham novel. I love this movie. I mean, this was, you know, at the end of high school, I really wanted to be a lawyer, and a lot of it was because of movies like A Time to Kill. And you know, we joked about, if Matthew McConaughey's a lawyer, he's going to be working out of the back of his car. Like, I buy that. That's kind of the same thing in Time to Kill. He was just a young upstart that nobody could really take, you know, seriously, and he takes the case of Sam Jackson. It's a really good story. I mean, it's fantastic. You know, Sammy Jackson's daughter is brutally attacked. The guys don't get the punishment he feels they deserve, so he gives it to him. And then Matthew McConaughey defends him. And it's a really good story, and it's a really hard story to watch because it takes place down south, and it is a very racially motivated story. But he's great in it. Sandra Bullock, Samuel L. Jackson, Kevin Spacey. It's a really good movie. And, I mean, Grisham had this run in the 90s to where they're making so many movies of his books, and most of them were really, really good. I mean, they all were in the same wheelhouse, but most of them were executed fairly well. And this one's no different. I absolutely love A Time to Kill, and it shows up on the movie channels every once in a while, and I'll rewatch it pretty much every time because he's really good at it. This is dude, like, starting off his career, and if you watch that and you say, like, oh, this is, you know, one of his first, like, major roles, absolutely I believe that dude's going to be an Oscar winner at some point because he's really good in that movie.
There's a couple, like, and I guess they're courtroom dramas that when they come on, like, I get stuck because, like, it's like if you hear a song, like, oh, I just have to hear the refrain, or I got to hear this one particular, like, riff because it's so great. And, like, A Few Good Men, I always have to stay for, like, did you order the Code Red? I have to see that. And then in this movie, I've got to see the Kevin Spacey, Samuel L. Jackson, yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell. Like, I can't get up and go about my rest of my life until I see that. Now, maybe it's just a thing with courtroom dramas. I don't know. Because I can't think of many other movies that it's like that. But it's just the way that maybe that particular kind of movie builds and builds and builds. And then you get that release. And then you're like, oh, all right, fine. I'm going to go watch. I don't even know it. I'm going to go watch Surfer Dude now. I don't know.
But yeah, so that was my number one. They only also ran... I threw down two for the money just because I dig sports gambling and I like the idea of it. It wasn't executed great, but he was well enough. I mean, he was good enough in it. That's really it. I mean, I liked Mud, but Mud didn't really jump out at me. Dallas Buyers Club, I knew you would have.
Sure.
Contact and Amistad, I almost put on, but they're not movies that I go back and rewatch regularly. He's good in them, but did you have any that we didn't get to?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, it's not like... Some of the ones that I may have left off more or less just hoping that you had them on there so we could talk about them. But, I mean, I think the movies of his that I like, I really do like. Some of the earlier stuff I kind of stayed away from maybe just because he was really only a bit part. But I thought that at least in terms of Wolf of Wall Street, his bit part, I thought really for me played a kind of a larger role in the how I view the movie, so that's kind of why I put it on there. But I think that if we do this list in like 10 years, it might look a lot different. I'm guessing that there'll be some movies that come out that we're just going to continue to be, you know, really impressed with what he does.
Because he hasn't really tied himself onto anything that he can't bounce back from. I mean, your rom-coms are disposable. If you have a bad one of those, you just his only mistake was
having a couple of them in a row.
A couple of them in a row, whereas instead of having a bad rom-com and then leaving the genre, like he had a couple, and that's kind of where that stigma comes from. But, you know, he hasn't tied himself into any contracts that don't let him get out of stuff. He didn't Logan Lerman himself into Percy Jackson. You know, he didn't do anything like that. So I'm really excited to see where, because after Interstellar, it's going to be that much more. Because not only is he an Oscar winner, that bankability, he's gonna have a $250 million movie under his belt. So, I mean, there's going to be no question about whether he can still headline a movie. So I'm really, not even 10, I'm really excited to see what the next 5 years hold for Matthew McConaughey. But if we missed yours, maybe you love Fools Rush In, Ghost Girlfriend's Past, Failure to Launch, starring four-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Terry Bradshaw. Let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, twitter@moviesonup. Let us know what we missed. If you see Interstellar, let us know how he was, how it was. I think we're both pretty excited about that this weekend. I'm hoping to get a chance to see it. But I think that's it. I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. We put up our Halloween episode last week. It's our first episode in 6 months. So if you liked that, it is back for Halloween.
If you like one podcast every 6 months.
Yeah, well, there should be, rumor has it, there's going to be a Thanksgiving episode too. So, but check Eric and Dave Talking. The cranberry sauce extrava yam yums. But yeah, that's ericanddave.com, Eric with a K. But until then, we'll be back next week with another actor-themed episode. We generally don't do them multiples in a row, but we had no ideas for November. So if you thought Matthew McConaughey was hard, wait till next week when we talk our favorite Jim Carrey movies. So we'll see you then, and until then,
keep it up.